I'd like to welcome everyone to today's call featuring telecommunications policy and legal experts discussing their stated concerns and arguments about why the proposed T-Mobile and Sprint merger is against the public interest as presently constructed. We'll first hear short remarks from each of the following speakers: Philip Barenbroek, Senior Policy Counsel for Public Knowledge; Gaurav Laroya, Policy Counsel for Free Press; Debbie Goldman, Research Director and Telecommunications Policy Director for the Communications Workers of America; Dr. Andrew Osterbach, CEO and Chief Technology Officer of CTC Technology and Energy; and Carrie Bennett, General Counsel of the Rural Wireless Association. Following speakers' remarks, we'll open up the line for a Q&A session and provide instructions at that time for how listeners can queue up to ask a question. Now, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Philip Barenbroek, Senior Policy Counsel for Public Knowledge.
Hi, thank you. This is Philip Barenbroek with Public Knowledge. The record compiled by the FCC clearly demonstrates that the proposed Sprint T-Mobile transaction will substantially reduce competition in the wireless market and harm consumers. Post-merger, the new T-Mobile, AT&T and Verizon, would control approximately 99% of the wireless market. Such a marketplace would leave customers facing higher prices, reduced variety in products and services, lower innovation, poorer quality of service, and reduced incentives to invest and compete. The transaction would also dramatically raise the already high barriers for new market entry and make it difficult for small rural wireless providers and MVNOs to continue to serve their customers. The merger is anti-competitive and does not serve the public interest. It should be rejected. Just as the FCC and the Department of Justice found last time they evaluated a 4-3 merger in the wireless industry, the proposed AT&T T-Mobile merger in 2011, the merger between Sprint and T-Mobile will leave consumers face in the wireless market facing higher prices, lower variety in products and services, less innovation, and poorer service quality and customer service. The combination will drastically consolidate the wireless market, both in terms of measurable market concentration and in spectrum holdings. The tool the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission use to measure market concentration already indicates that the wireless market is highly concentrated. The proposed transaction further increases the high level of concentration in the market, and the merger would result in new T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T having approximately 99% of the wireless market, with very little chance of new entry by new competitors. This level of concentration would actually exceed what DOJ found would have resulted as a consequence of the AT&T T-Mobile merger. New market entry is ultimately very unlikely post-merger because of the well-documented high barriers to entry in the wireless market, spectrum acquisition costs and high costs of network deployment, backhaul, and roaming. This deal exacerbates those barriers by making spectrum concentration even more problematic and increasing spectrum costs, and drastically consolidates the wholesale and roaming markets, making it even more expensive for MVNOs and small wireless carriers to grow. Spectrum is the lifeblood of the wireless services industry, and the proposed merger would result in the combined firm holding more than a third of the low and mid-band spectrum, exceeding the FCC spectrum screen, in counties where 92% of the U.S. population, or 284 million people, live. The benefits of the merger that T-Mobile and Sprint point out are speculative and not merger-specific. To address two, both carriers have independently promised to deploy 5G nationwide networks, both prior to and since the announcement of their merger. 5G generally, and 5G from these individual firms, is therefore not a merger-specific benefit. Finally, Sprint is not a failing firm. The companies continue to make a lukewarm version of this argument to the FCC. However, Sprint's case that it is a failing firm or a flailing firm, and its documented struggles warrant allowing the merger, fails the Department of Justice's and the Federal Trade Commission's failing firm analysis, which the FCC also uses to determine whether to permit an otherwise anti-competitive merger. I'm happy to address any other questions on the back end, but I'll turn it back over to the moderator.
Thank you. That was Philip Barenbroek, Senior Policy Counsel for Public Knowledge. And after today's call, we'll send a press release with the names and summary of quotes from each of the speakers, so be on the lookout for that. Now we'd like to hear from Gaurav Laroya, Policy Counsel for Free Press.
Hey there, and thank you. So we at Free Press believe, as we stated on our initial filing, that T-Mobile and Sprint have failed to demonstrate that the proposed merger will be in the public interest. So both companies have argued the merger will be a good deal for its customers, affordability, and competition. In reality, T-Mobile and Sprint are each other's main competitors and trade customers regularly. They compete for value-conscious and low-income customers. And by intending to merge, both of these companies are chasing after greater profits at the expense of the customers that rely on them the most. This merger would create serious anti-competitive consumer and public interest harms. In recent years, competition from T-Mobile and Sprint has forced AT&T and Verizon to innovate and produce benefits like the elimination of the two-year contract, a return of unlimited data plans, increased availability of innovative and low-cost resellers, increased marketing of prepaid plans, and other pro-consumer developments. While these may seem like an ordinary market development, this competitive trend only really took off after the government rejected AT&T's attempt to acquire T-Mobile and consolidate the market in 2011, and continued when the government signaled it would not approve a merger between Sprint and T-Mobile in 2014 and on other occasions when its merger has been proposed. The cell phone market is already highly concentrated. 10 years ago, there were 6 national carriers, and now there's only 4, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. And the elimination of Sprint means a market with only 3 carriers and even fewer choices for consumers. With so few competitors, we found this market is already vulnerable to coordinated conduct amongst its players. So much of the subscriber base and industry's revenues are already concentrated between AT&T, Verizon, controls 69% of the national market connections. We believe this merger would exacerbate pressures with top firms to engage in coordinating behavior. This merger would eliminate the 2 maverick competitors, replacing them with a newly combined entity equal in size to AT&T and Verizon, leading to a, as some analysts have said, a more stable pricing environment, which is exactly why Wall Street is clamoring for this merger. The merger will also harm consumers by decreasing that competition. Both T-Mobile and Sprint have been forced to innovate in order to compete against each other and those 2 premier carriers. This competition has led to many of those market advances and lowered prices, and especially in the prepaid market, which disproportionately caters to people of color and low-income customers by not requiring credit checks to get a cell phone plan. Both T-Mobile and Sprint have carved out that piece of the market for price-conscious consumers, and so providing those low-priced plans and equipment, as well as marketing their own value brands like Boost Mobile and Metro PCS. These more affordable, no-credit check options make T-Mobile and Sprint the go-to carriers for people of color and people with lower incomes. In fact, according to a recent survey from S&P Global Market Intelligence, 56% of T-Mobile's customers are people of color, as are 45% of Sprint's customers. That number is even higher for some of these carriers' prepaid brands, 62% for Metro PCS customers, and 57% of Boost Mobile's customers are people of color. And while 15% of T-Mobile's customers and 12% of Sprint's customers earn incomes below $25,000 a year, those numbers spike for their prepaid brands, 30% of Metro PCS and 34% of Boost Mobile's customers earn less than $25,000 a year. The merger won't just affect mobile phone affordability. Low-income people and people of color have fewer options for getting online and have fewer households with 6 broadband connections. Mobile internet isn't a substitute, but it does help close the digital divide, the internet being a necessity, not a luxury. Rising prices means some of those members of those communities will have to choose between purchasing mobile internet access, putting food on that plate, or other economic necessities, and widening that divide. T-Mobile and Sprint's claims about the positive impacts of this merger are overblown and don't outweigh the negative impacts I just mentioned. Both of these companies have claimed that by merging, they'll be able to deploy their next-generation technology faster, and we've been down this road before. To sell the proposed merger in 2011, AT&T and T-Mobile made similar claims about how they needed to merge in order to deploy 4G LTE technology. They claimed that T-Mobile had no clear path to LTE without the merger, which was completely wrong. AT&T also claimed its 4G LTE development would stop at approximately 80% of the U.S. population. Not only was this completely wrong, but AT&T achieved nationwide 4G LTE faster without acquiring T-Mobile than it claimed it would have had the firms merged. We're seeing those same kinds of promises again. Looking at their investment numbers, we estimate that, at best, the combined entity would deploy 5G merely 6 months faster than T-Mobile and Sprint would separately. They claim that without this merger, 5G deployment will remain outside their grasp, yet in public statements before the proposed merger, Sprint has promised a nationwide 5G network by the end of 2019, and T-Mobile indicated it would fully deploy its 5G network by the end of 2020. The last time the Commission and the Department of Justice were faced with a similar national wireless market merger, they rejected it and set up a period of pro-consumer market expansion and competition, and we hope they do so again. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Gaurav Laroya, the Policy Counsel for Free Press. Now we'll hear from Debbie Goldman, the Research Director and Telecommunications Policy Director for CWA.
Thank you. The proposed merger between T-Mobile and Sprint is currently structured as not in the public interest and will lead to the loss of 30,000 jobs in the United States. As you've already heard, it will result in significant anti-competitive harm with no countervailing, verifiable merger-related benefits. T-Mobile and Sprint are each other's biggest competitors. As you heard earlier, this merger blows the Department of Justice's competitive screen, known as the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index, or HHI, out of the water. In an already highly concentrated market, the increase in market concentration from the merger of over 500 points is more than double the DOJ's benchmark to demonstrate post-merger market power. And the merger of the company's prepaid services, Boost and Metro PCS, increases the HHI by over 1,000 points, four times the DOJ benchmark. As you also heard, the FCC looks at spectrum concentration and uses a spectrum screen of one-third of the available spectrum. The new T-Mobile will exceed the spectrum screen in counties with 92% of the U.S. population, or about 284 million people. Since T-Mobile and Sprint can't defend their merger on competitive grounds, they try to focus on so-called speculative in-the-future benefits. But here, too, their defense falls apart. They claim that a merger that will generate $43 million in synergies will create jobs. But Wall Street analysts and Logic and CWA's own analysis dispute this claim. In our initial comments, we provided an analysis of the job loss after the merger, which we have updated in our current reply comments file today. The current analysis shows that T-Mobile will shut down thousands of competing retail stores, stores that often are right across the street from each other, and this will lead to the loss of as many as 25,500 employees, both at their corporate stores and authorized dealers. Again, the loss of 25,500 employees at the retail outlets, both corporate and authorized dealers. We estimate another 4,500 jobs will be lost merging headquarter functions. And I want to emphasize that Sprint and T-Mobile's speculative claims about job creation in their opposition to our comments have not refuted our claims about shutting down jobs. In fact, CEO John Ledger told both the Senate Antitrust Committee and even a recent town hall in Sprint's headquarters that he anticipates shutting down retail outlets. T-Mobile and Sprint claim they need the merger to build 5G. But yesterday on T-Mobile's earnings call, and just this morning on Sprint's third quarter earnings call, they each touted their standalone company's 5G plans. T-Mobile's John Ledger announced T-Mobile will launch 5G in hundreds of cities this year, and Sprint CEO announced 5G launch in 2019. Sprint's third quarter earnings call this morning also confirmed that despite what they're telling regulators, the company is a viable firm that is growing revenues, earning subscribers, and making investments for the future. And finally, the connections between T-Mobile and Sprint and their parent companies, Deutsche Telekom and SoftBank, with Chinese equipment manufacturers Huawei and ZTE, raise national security concerns. In sum, when merger-related harms are predictable and the benefits speculative, the merger fails the public interest test. The regulators should not approve this merger absent verifiable commitments to preserve and grow jobs and a finding that all national security concerns are addressed. And now I want to turn the call over to Dr. Andrew Afflerbach, whose analysis of T-Mobile's engineering documents and public interest statement finds that the merger will not improve wireless broadband service in rural areas beyond what standalone T-Mobile would provide. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The key fact that we found in our technical review of the T-Mobile public interest statement is that for the majority of rural Americans, the proposed T-Mobile-Sprint merger does not improve service or coverage over standard T-Mobile service. We derive from the information provided in the public interest statement that merged T-Mobile-Sprint would have the same service and coverage as standalone T-Mobile for as many as 74% of the rural population, even in 2024, years after the merger. This number is derived from the data in Table 9 of the public interest statement and map of the areas unserved by mid-band spectrum shown in Figure 10. This poor outcome for rural areas is because Sprint brings relatively little rural infrastructure to the arrangement. The main element of synergy coming from Sprint will be the ability to add the 2.5 gigahertz mid-band spectrum to T-Mobile antenna sites. This mid-band spectrum provides the potential of hundreds of megabits per second of speed. However, the mid-band signal is easily blocked by foliage and terrain and has a range of only a few miles. While the mid-band spectrum pays greater dividends in metropolitan areas, in rural areas, the towers are far apart and most of the population is spread out, and there are often hills and trees. Therefore, the majority of rural Americans, up to 74%, will only be served by the same 600 megahertz low-band spectrum that they would receive from standalone T-Mobile absent the merger. The public interest statement notes prominently that by 2024, there will be 59.4 million rural Americans served by merged T-Mobile. This, however, is only a modest increase over the number T-Mobile would serve absent the merger. Based on Table 9 in the public interest statement, the total number of Americans served increases only from 323 million for standalone T-Mobile absent the merger to 324.1 million with the merger by 2024. So the 59.4 million total is at most a 1.1 million increase, less than 2% greater than the population that would already be served by T-Mobile absent the merger. Furthermore, we believe that the public interest statement overstates the benefits of 5G technology. The public interest statement claims data rates at individual antenna sites of 20 gigabits per second and a latency of 1 millisecond. This performance level requires not only 5G, but also the use of millimeter wave spectrum. Currently, Sprint and T-Mobile hold a very small percentage of the millimeter wave spectrum that has been auctioned. It's also important to note that this performance has not yet been demonstrated in tests and that the costs and capabilities of the 5G technology in the coming years are still estimates. In rural areas, the 5G claims are especially overstated. Even where T-Mobile holds millimeter wave spectrum, the very short range of millimeter wave signals, usually a fraction of a mile, has very little usefulness in most rural areas. Using the 600 megahertz low-band spectrum that will be the service received by up to 74% of rural Americans, 5G is only expected to provide a 19% increase in spectral efficiency relative to 4G LTE, and it will not provide close to 1 millisecond latency. This modest difference between 5G and 4G in the low band performance may pose challenges for rural Americans in obtaining the bandwidth intensive and low latency applications promised in the public interest statement, including interactive gaming and connected vehicles and machine-to-machine communications. While we do not feel from a technical perspective that the rural population will have diminished service or coverage, it is clear that the public interest statement overstates the benefit of the proposed merger to rural Americans. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Dr. Andrew Osterbach, the CEO and Chief Technology Officer of CTC Technology and Energy. And finally, we'll hear from Carrie Bennett, the General Counsel of the Rural Wireless Association.
Thank you. I just want to comment on something that Andy said just to kick off here. We've been in, our carriers have been in rural America a long time trying to provide coverage. We're still waiting to see where T-Mobile and Sprint bring that coverage. They haven't done it for 20 years, and combining, we don't see them doing it either, and I think the record supports that. But let me get on to the wholesale roaming aspects of this. Our members, rural carriers, serve very small rural areas and are very reliant on Sprint, particularly for roaming coverage, because Sprint has reduced rates from that we see of T-Mobile. And in fact, the rates of Sprint's roaming rates are 20 times lower than those of T-Mobile. Our concern is that with Sprint combining with T-Mobile, that those rates will go up. In their opposition, the applicants have stated that they will give rural carriers an opportunity to choose the rate. That's for existing agreements that expire very soon. And we don't know what happens after that, and we have not gotten a satisfactory answer from Sprint or T-Mobile on that aspect of it. In the past, we've seen a lot of hanky-panky going on with these roaming rates. The roaming rates tend to be at least 10 to 15 and sometimes 20 higher, times higher than the retail rates that they charge their own customers, yet they don't have the cost of acquiring a customer. They just have the rates higher, and we believe that that's anti-competitive and that will continue with the merger, and we have one less partner to roam with. Another indication from us of this merger not being in the public interest is that we've watched what T-Mobile has done on the rural call completion issue, and we've seen those shenanigans. It's ironic to us that they like to bill themselves as the consumer-friendly uncarrier, yet to save untold amounts of money, they've intentionally prevented calls from its own customers going to customers in rural telephone companies' areas. Can you imagine not being able to reach your ailing mother in rural Wisconsin because your T-Mobile phone rings and rings, but actually it's never even connected to her local network due to them inserting a false ringtone into the phone call to make it appear as if it's ringing when it's not? That kind of behavior needs to be examined in the course of this merger. Because if that's the kind of behavior that is considered consumer-friendly, I don't think we have a merger that is going to be consumer-friendly post-merger. We also have been following 5G, and we're concerned that in our race to 5G and pitting the U.S. first, which creates lots and lots of jobs and creates billions for the economy, that that may be compromised as a result of this merger. We see that a merger only happens when the bottom line of the new company will be improved. Cost savings translates to improved profitability that will be passed on to investors. I think we have to look at who the investors are in this case. Sprint's biggest investor is Japanese-owned SoftBank, and T-Mobile's is German-owned Deutsche Telekom. Both of these foreign-owned companies are also competing in the race to 5G in Asia and Europe. And where they are using, I think as we heard before, Chinese-based equipment vendors, which in turn improves China's position in the race to 5G, and all of that being done on the backs of the U.S. consumer. So we have a lot of concerns with this merger, and we believe that it's not in the public interest. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Carrie Bennett, the General Counsel of the Rural Wireless Association. Now we're going to open it up for questions. So if our operator, Bree, could please provide instructions for how listeners can queue up to ask.
Absolutely. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone phone. You can remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. Again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we'll pause a moment to allow any questions to queue. And we can take our first question from Drew Fitzgerald with WSJ. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Carrie, I have a question for you and anyone else who wants to chime in on one thing you mentioned in the history of T-Mobile not being able to connect some calls that have gone through its network. Do you have any more detail on what the cause of those misconnections were, not the false ringtones, but the connections not going through in the first place, and any data on what's the situation has been since that settlement went into effect, I think, earlier this year. Thanks.
I'm not technical, Drew, but I believe it's because T-Mobile was handing off calls to a leased call router, and the cost of completing the calls was probably more than the leased call routing company wanted to pay to terminate the calls. So I think they went off into limbo and kept repeating trying to connect and not being able to connect.
Okay, and is that still an issue that you see your members or other rural carriers
facing? Yeah, the rural call completion issue is still an issue. And that's something that the FCC is still trying to, you know, obviously Congress passed legislation and the FCC is still trying to deal with it. I understand that T-Mobile entered into a compliance program, so I'm not sure what the status of that is at this point. And they were fined $40 million by the FCC as a result of their behavior.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And again, that is star and one to ask a question. And we will take our next question from Paul Kirby with TR Daily. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Are any of your comments, Debbie mentioned the updated analysis of job losses. Are any of your other comments different than comments you made in your initial petitions to deny or comments you filed in this proceeding? And are any of those related to the economic engineering and efficiency modeling that the FCC stopped the clock for to get that information? And what time do you all expect your replies to be filed today?
I'll answer for CWA. We had initial opportunity to review some of the confidential information, so unfortunately that won't be available to you. But we are filing a updated declaration from Dr. Afflerbach, who you've heard on this call, who has reviewed the internal engineering documents. We've also reviewed the internal documents as to the claim that Sprint is a failing firm, and we will also be filing our confidential information about that. And then, as you said, we had an updated jobs analysis. Finally, in terms of the economics, we have looked at the applicants' economists and found internal contradictions and inconsistencies, and that is provided in our filing. I believe our filing has been filed as we speak, and we're certainly happy to provide it to anybody on the call if it hasn't yet been uploaded to the ECFS, and I believe there will be press releases going out. Let me have my colleagues respond as well.
Hi, this is Gaurav from Free Press. So most of our reply comment will actually concern the confidential information that was provided to us by the carrier, so I'm not sure how much of it is going to make redacted review. But in general, and we talked about this in our initial filing, that information confirms what we said, and that Sprint and T-Mobile actually do compete very vigorously with each other, unlike what they have said, and they trade customers back and forth, and competition between them is vibrant and you know, a force in the market.
Thank you.
Paul, this is Carrie. I'm still working on ours.
Hey, Paul, it's Philip over at PK. We'll be filing ours later this afternoon. So, you know, look out for that. We should send around a press release when the filing goes in. But additionally, in addition to buttressing the arguments that, you know, we largely made in our original petition to deny, like CWA, we also take on this argument that the applicants continue to repeat, which is that Sprint is somehow too weak or incapable of competing going forward. So in our initial filing, we did a pretty strong job of taking apart the failing firm case that Sprint would have to make under the DOJ and FTC failing firm guidelines in the horizontal merger guidelines. And the FCC uses that standard typically. In our new filing, we also address, you know, Sprint's argument is largely sort of a warmed over version of a failing firm argument. They don't want to put that name on it because their arguments would fail the formal analysis from DOJ. So they sort of make a weakened firm argument. And so we address that as well. And what we find is that federal courts repeatedly find that financial weakness, while relevant in some cases, is usually the weakest ground for justifying a merger, and that the Sixth Circuit has actually called a weakened firm defense for a merger the, quote, Hail Mary pass of presumptively doomed mergers. So we address some of that newly in our filing.
Thank you.
This is Debbie again, Debbie Goldman.
Since you specifically were pointing to the economics, I just want to point out one thing that is in our filing and has been raised by the Dish economists as well. The economic analysis that is provided by the T-Mobile economists rests almost entirely on their claim that they will realize very speculative efficiencies. And those efficiencies are projected 3 and 6 years out, both from an economic point of view and from a legal point of view. Efficiencies that are projected 3 to 6 years out are considered highly speculative and therefore should be treated with many, many grains of salt. And that critique is certainly in our filing and will be made before the agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will take our next question from Todd Shields with Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi. Some on Wall Street are saying that the lack of a big outcry around this merger augurs for its success before regulators, and I don't think we're seeing the kind of noise we saw around AT&T T-Mobile a number of years ago, for example. Can you all address that perception? Thank you.
This is Debbie Goldenman again. I'll jump in, and I know my colleagues will have something to say as well. This merger is as problematic, if not more problematic, than that transaction in terms of the looking at the unilateral and the collusion impacts, so the anti-competitive, with no countervailing public interest benefits, for example, the job loss. I think there was an effort to get one analyst perspective out there today about the chances for the merger, but if you, for example, read Moffitt-Nathanson, they said we continue to see that there is a 50-50 chance. And as you know, as the regulators, and here we're talking not only the Department of Justice and the FCC and the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, we're also talking about a state attorney general investigation, which if you've been following, being led by New York, California, and Tennessee, is conducting a very intensive investigation. As the look at this evidence continues, I think it will be very clear that the evidence is overwhelmingly that the competitive impacts are in no way outweighed by the speculative public interest benefits. And as people begin to see more and more what this can impact in terms of direct consumer price, in terms of lack of alternatives, in terms of job loss, I think you're going to begin to be seeing more and more of an outcry around this transaction. And I should also add that the California Public Utility Commission is reviewing this transaction. They're going to be holding public hearings. The dates and locations have not been announced, but this will give an opportunity to hear from the public the concerns. And their review, the deadline for a decision is not until the second half of 2016. So there's a lot of time still to go.
Debbie, I think you meant 2019.
I meant 2019. Thank you.
This is,
I know Todd Shields would correct me as well. Thank you.
This is Carrie Bennett, and I would just add to that that, you know, when I read, you know, what analysts say about a deal and them not having the insight into what's going on at DOJ and even at the FCC, that gives me great pause for concern. I think the fact that you're not hearing a lot means that it's being given a lot of review and a lot of consideration. And I think you have to couple with that with the document requests that have been pouring in that the FCC's made the applicant submit. And there's just a huge, huge, huge production of documents that have gone on, and it takes a long time to get through all of those documents. So I think at this point, I collaborate with a firm that does a lot of litigation work, and we're working on through this. It's like one of the biggest databases that's been created in the history of the firm. So I think that's very telling right there. So it's just a long process to get through, and until you've gone down and done all your analysis, I don't think you're going to hear anything out of the government. I think this issue also that's weighing heavily on this administration is it's under CFIUS review on the combined foreign ownership. And I think that's something that I think a lot of people haven't been talking about and focusing on because they've been focusing at the DOJ and the FCC and with the state AGs. So I think that's going to be very telling as well.
Hey, Todd, this is Philip at Public Knowledge. With regard to the question about sort of the noise around the deal and comparing it to, you know, prior transactions, I think that's a little bit of a non-story in this case as far as what you're likely to see the FCC and the Department of Justice do. I mean, frankly, if you recall back in 2011 when AT&T was pitching, you know, everyone under the sun on why it needed to acquire T-Mobile to deploy 4G LTE, it had an entirely extravagant, PR campaign around that, and it went across the country and generated, support from a whole lot of interest groups, local interest groups. We saw the same strategy with Comcast when it tried to acquire Time Warner Cable back in 2015, and we both know how both of those transactions turned out. So. I think at the end of the day, as Carrie mentioned, the Department of Justice and the FCC are going to have to look at the facts here, and they're going to have to look at the law, and you have to look at what serves the public interest. And the tools that those agencies use to understand what are the likely impacts on consumers and competition all point to this merger having a drastic effect to consolidate the marketplace, to harm consumers. in effect, as Debbie said, to a degree that's even worse than what was happening in the AT&T T-Mobile transaction, partially because of the markets that these two carriers serve. Also, given, frankly, the spectrum aggregation issues, there isn't spectrum out there to be found for potential market interests or market entrants or smaller players. So I would ignore the noise and I would look for the facts. That's how we're approaching this deal.
Thank you all.
Thank you. And we will take our next question from Kelsey Griffiths with Law 360. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Kelsey with Law 360, as you just said. I'm wondering if you can give some context for some of the comments that are coming in from small towns and rural areas saying Sprint T-Mobile is going to be really good for their areas. Do you think that they're taking the statements they've heard in the merger at face value, or is there something else going on?
This is Carrie Bennett, and I would say I don't know where they're getting their information from, but historically, Sprint and T-Mobile have not built out to rural America, and when they do, they focus on the county seat and the interstate highways. So to the extent that those people live in a county seat or an interstate highway or along an interstate highway, there may be cause for excitement. To the extent that they live outside of where a traditional rural carrier is servicing, and then there are a lot of areas where rural carriers don't service, maybe there's cause to be excitement, but we don't see it. We don't see in our analysis of the data that they've submitted where their rural coverage improves, and I think you heard that from Andy as well. So I'm not sure what they're basing their facts on, so it's a bit difficult to answer the question, but it's historically not something that we've seen. We don't see it happening going forward either.
And I would agree with that summary. I think basically what you have is the headlines look very positive, but looking under the hood at the tables and information that's in the public interest statement, that's just there in plain view and not in the headline portion. It's pretty clear that will nobody in the rural areas get benefit? No, that's not true. There will be people who do it, but the majority. Again, as I said, up to 74% of the rural areas are going to see exactly the same story with T-Mobile as merged T-Mobile. Some of the improvements that you're seeing that they may be reflecting on may be improvements that T-Mobile is making on its own absent the merger. And so our key parameter was looking at merger versus not merger, as opposed to looking at now versus what T-Mobile would accomplish on its own. So that's a very important distinction for all of us to make as we look at this.
Excuse me, that was Andrew.
This is Philip at Public Knowledge. Yeah, to answer your question directly, yes, I think those filers are largely taking the applicant's claims at face value. And I don't think that that's surprising. I think, we've seen this playbook before. It's the same playbook that AT&T T-Mobile ran in 2011. It's the same playbook that Comcast and Time Warner Cable ran in 2015. It failed both times because the facts indicated that those transactions would harm consumers and competition. That is the case here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will take our next question from Bob Wilkos with CTFN. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious, are there any specific, if this deal is approved, are there any just key conditions or divestitures you'd like to see applied? Can you hear me?
This is Philip at Public Knowledge again.
I'm just curious if there's any conditions you're thinking about at this point.
Right.
If they could apply, that would satisfy you.
Yeah. No.
No.
No. There are not. In short, the harms posed by the transaction are so substantial that conditions will be unable to remedy those harms and make the transaction serve the public interest. So, no.
And how about divestiture?
Is Carrie Bennett. I was just going to address the question. It's like, I think the problem that you have here is whatever can, if there were any, let's just say for the argument there were conditions, they would be going towards the new T-Mobile's behavior. And I can tell you from a rural carrier perspective, we don't trust the current T-Mobile's behavior, and we don't trust that they would keep to their conditions, and those conditions over time would fall apart. So that's why our membership is not interested in any kind of conditions, because those kinds of things are hard to enforce, and you spend a lot of time in court post-merger trying to enforce those kinds of things, and it's not economically possible for these smaller guys to be able to do that. So we don't think that it would work no matter what you did.
This is Philip again with Public Knowledge. And with regards to the question on divestitures, one of the arguments that the applicants make in their public interest statement and they keep returning back to is that Sprint just doesn't have the scale to compete going forward. So, taking that argument at face value, which we don't, but for the purposes of the divestiture question, taking it at face value, usually the divestiture would involve a spinoff of spectrum assets. So Sprint, according to last year's mobile competition report, had about 59 million customers. So in order to replace the competition in the marketplace or have some sort of competitor in the marketplace that could be an option for those consumers, you would need that spectrum to go someplace where consumers, presumably that don't like the new company or want a competitor to AT&T and Verizon could go. There's no potential competitor in the marketplace to spin those assets off to that has scale even approaching what Sprint has. For instance, the applicants often point to Dish as a potential new market entrant. Well, Dish has about 13 million satellite subscribers. Even if in some, hypothetical world, Dish was able to convert every single one of its satellite subscribers to a wireless customer for a network that does not yet exist, it would still be more than four times smaller than the current size of Sprint. So the idea that you could divest of those assets to a carrier that would then have the scale to compete to the degree that Sprint has now is just sort of it's a fantasy. It doesn't exist.
So what does the DOJ do then?
They block the deal.
If they're concerned,
they call it illegal and they block the deal.
They just block it. You're saying DOJ only has they either have to block it or approve it, right?
No, I mean, well, they do have other options at their disposal, but in order to best protect competition and consumers, the only option they have at their disposal is to block the deal. If they were to approve the deal, condition the deal, or approve divestitures as a condition of the deal, those options would leave consumers with a far more consolidated wireless marketplace, higher prices, lower quality of services.
All right, thank you.
And again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we'll pause a moment to allow any further questions to queue.
And before we break, in case there's a no more questions. I just wanted to flag there's a new merger-related website that TWA has launched this week. It is at tmobilesprintfacts.org. That's tmobilesprintfacts.org. And it's going to serve as an ongoing clearinghouse for a lot of merger-related information, including a lot of the detailed policy resources and comments that have been filed, that have been discussed today, as well as a lot of topical fact sheets and state-by-state and national job loss estimates from CWA. So I don't know, Bree, if there's any final questions that have queued up.
We do. We will take our last question as a follow-up from Paul Kirby with TR Daily. Please go ahead.
Andy, are one of the other speakers your client, or did you file separately? I was a little unclear from your remarks who your analysis is done for.
This is Andrew. This is done for the Communications Workers of America.
Okay, thank you.
So there's a statement that I've prepared that's part of the CWA filings and also as part of the upcoming supplemental filing as well.
Okay, and then Debbie, your filing, ECFS has not been put up. Your filing is not in ECFS yet. If you could email it, that would be good.
We will do that. I wanted also just to respond to the earlier question. I didn't jump in yet about conditions. We think there is a very high bar, as my colleagues have talked about, to overcome the competition concerns. We have heard from many Sprint and T-Mobile workers, some of whom are union members, their deep concerns about the impact of the merger on their jobs. And we do believe that no merger should go through without verifiable conditions that no jobs are lost, and that indeed much of the offshore call center work that both T-Mobile and Sprint send offshore be brought back to the United States, as well as that these companies that have a long history of fighting their workers' interest in having union representation, that they respect workers' rights. So no merger should go through that would reduce the number of options for employees who at this point, because they don't have representation in a union, they are at the mercy of the marketplace in terms of their wages and their conditions. A growing body of antitrust law shows that as you have more concentration and less options for workers, this depresses the working conditions and the compensation. And therefore, we think that no merger should go through without a protections for those workers at T-Mobile and Sprint. Finally, the CFIUS review has to address all of the very significant national security concerns that have been raised. Thank you.
Thank you to everyone for their time today. Please be on the lookout in your inboxes for a follow-up press release coming this afternoon that will include an audio link to today's proceedings, as well as quotes from each of today's speakers and names and affiliations. Thank you.